Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We're very happy to welcome legendary dancer and choreographer Lavelle Smith Jr. to the show, chatting about the 25th anniversary of Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation. Lavelle was an important part of the videos and tour process and shares his memories from 1989. Not to mention letting us know how Michael Jackson felt about Janet's history-making album and if it inspired Michael with his own music. We also welcome rising UK band Royal Blood and talented Canadian artist Lights to the program, talking about their new music and place in the music industry.
Capture your need for sound.
We're very excited to welcome to the show a legendary dancer and choreographer who's won a bunch of awards, including a Bob Fosse Award, not to mention 5 MTV Video Music Awards for Best Choreography for videos featuring En Vogue, Beyoncé, and Michael and Janet Jackson. Lavelle Smith Jr. joins us to talk about his amazing career and weigh in on the 25th anniversary of Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation project and tour, which he was a part of. Lavelle, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Kelly.
Lavelle, I wanted to start off by asking you, did you know as a kid that you wanted to be a dancer? Was that something that your heart was always in?
Yeah, but as a kid, you want to be a fireman, an astronaut, you want to be everything. So my mom kind of took it as, okay, that's good. But I did take gymnastics. But yeah, I kind of knew that I wanted to do it from really young. I just like watching it on TV. I like seeing other people do it. I like doing it. So yeah, I kind of knew.
What was your first big break in the dance world?
I guess Diana Ross tour, maybe. Excuse me, when I was 19, I did Diana Ross tour, her Eatin' Alive tour, all the casinos, Golden Nugget and Caesars and all those. And yeah, that was awesome. So I think that might be the first big one.
Now, you've had a long and successful career working with the Jacksons, both Janet and, of course, Michael. How did you and Michael first come to work together and then become friends?
Well, we met on Smooth Criminal. And yeah, it just kind of went from there. He said that he knew the first day he saw me dance that he wanted me to be on his bad tour. So yeah, that's kind of how it happened. Smooth Criminal, first time.
You're one of the few dancers that I know of who's had the opportunity to work extensively with both Janet and Michael. How would you compare and contrast the two, specifically when it comes to how they view dance and prepare their performances and tours?
Well, first of all, I probably wouldn't compare them, but things that I do find similar is that they both work hard. Extremely hard workers and obviously extremely talented. But yeah, and their approaches, I mean, they understand that it's work that makes a great piece of art. It's not just, you know, let's get up and do it. It takes some thought and it takes work. And they both do that very well.
How did you get involved with Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation project?
I met Janet after the Bad Tour. I forget what country. And she said, I'm doing a project and I would love it if you'd be a part of it. And, you know, people say that all the time, so you think, oh, okay, whatever. But it was on the Bad Tour, and it was Rhythm Nation, so she actually called me after the Bad Tour.
Looking back, what do you think of when you first heard the Rhythm Nation album? You know, did it blow you away and solidify that, you know, Janet really was a talented artist in her own right and not riding on any sort of Jackson family coattails?
I remember having a meeting with her where she gave me, I think, 3 songs. And it was The Knowledge, Miss You Much, and Rhythm Nation. And I played it on the way home, you know, from the meeting. And I remember just thinking, this is insane. I've never heard anything like this before. So, yeah, I was blown away.
When it came to the project itself, when she said she wanted you on it, were you there sort of right from the beginning, Lavelle? And you know, did you sort of know right away that it was going to be something special?
Well, I did, because she had Anthony Thomas was there, and I remember Anthony Thomas, me, and Barry Lather in the beginning and for the audition, and I just remember seeing Anthony's stuff and learning it and thinking, oh my gosh, I've never danced this way before, and it felt great. So I kind of knew that something was up. Didn't know how big, but I knew that it was going to be an awesome experience.
Speaking of those moves from Anthony, and then obviously you had a hand in doing some choreography as well. If
yeah.
I understand correctly, The Knowledge was sort of your baby. How did you meld what you were doing with Anthony's and to sort of make Janet happy with what was going on for the flow of the entire project?
You know, I think in life you have those moments or those jobs where everything just clicks. The people click, the music and the dance click. It's just a moment where everything works, and that was one of those moments. Anthony and I don't think we ever sat down and talked about it, you know, how to make it work. we just did what we both do, and it worked. You know, conceptually, the knowledge was so much fun because we got to be aggressive. But then when Anthony's section came in at the middle and end, he just nailed it. It worked. You can't question it. Don't know why. Just did.
How long was that part of the process, Lavelle, sort of putting together the choreography for those three, you know, kickoff videos that were you know, going to sort of really launch the project, like you mentioned, The Knowledge, Miss You Much, and Rhythm Nation?
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking that just from meetings with, you know, with her and getting the music and auditions and rehearsals, it's probably a good 6 weeks to 2 months, so it was long. It was long. We were working.
And when it came to choosing the dancers, did you have a hand in that as well? And again, what were you guys looking for overall with regards to dancers that would be on that project?
You know, I remember not really having any specific thing we were looking for, just people with something, you know? People you could see joy in their eyes, or they were enjoying dancing and whatever. We were just looking for special people that could dance. But really, most important, I think, was special people, really cool people.
What was the tone actually like in rehearsals? Because from the outside looking in, it seemed that, you know, all of you were enjoying the process, but there also, again, at least to me, seemed like there was, you know, a sense of urgency and importance to what you guys were trying to get across to the world with regards to the videos and the tour.
Yeah, that's true. That you know, the fact that there was a message just enhanced everything. It made what you were doing more important, that it'd be great. You know, if you have a great message, sometimes maybe it's not her for whatever reason, but if we can put some great and amazing music and some amazing dance behind it, maybe people will listen. And that wasn't just, you know, some jobs are just, it's just a mantra, but that was a real thing that we were all trying to do. We listened to the words, we knew what they meant, and we're trying to live that.
When it came to putting the actual tour part together, obviously this was Janet's first big tour. She didn't tour, you know, with Control, so I think there was a lot of anticipation for what she was going to come out with. And obviously it was a hugely successful tour. Did you guys feel a lot of pressure for that tour to sort of knock it out of the ballpark?
I think when you're someone like Janet, when you're accustomed to hard work, working hard, and doing something until it's right, I don't think you really think about, oh, it has to be good. You know it's going to be the best that you can do. Whether people love her or not, you might not know. But if you work hard the way she does, you know that you've done all you can. So I think that was her approach. She didn't seem scared or nervous. We just wanted to do great stuff.
I asked this of Tina Landon, and I wanted to get your opinion on it as well. You know, I asked Tina, you know, being on tour, traveling to all these different cities and these different countries, if she felt how special everything was, or if it was a bit of a bubble and you guys couldn't tell exactly how much you were affecting the world. She said she knew. Did you know what a special experience it was with regards to the fans and just how even critics were taking it all in?
You know, I did, and I think it really, really hit me when we were in Germany. And right across the street from the Intercontinental Hotel where we were staying, the wall was coming down. I remember looking out my window and seeing it, watching CNN in my room and seeing it, and then performing. I mean, that was just a special moment. That's when you kind of know that something's happening. This is doing something. I don't think I really remember reading anything. I just felt it.
Janet's always said in interviews that when she's on tour and you know, doing a project, whether it was, you know, Rhythm Nation or the Janet album and so on, that she really wants like a family-like vibe surrounding her, and that's important to her. Was that the case, obviously, with Rhythm Nation? Because, again, that was her first big tour. Did you guys really feel like this was like a cohesive unit going out to tackle the world?
Yes, for sure. For sure. Everybody clicked. It was nice, really nice people that happened to be really talented. I mean, that includes the dancers, band, everybody, just a great group.
You know, you and Michael were close. Obviously, you worked with him for so long. Did he ever speak about Rhythm Nation? Because I remember hearing an interview where he sort of mentioned that he liked dancing to Janet's music. Did he know how special Rhythm Nation was?
Of course. Yeah, you know, anytime I think there's somebody saying something amazing or doing something amazing, Michael, he knows, you know, he knew. I always say what he does. But yes, he knew that it was happening. And this time it just happened to be his sister. So I think that made it even more special. But he loved it. Still would talk about it way, way after. So I know he loved it.
Did he have a particular song that sort of really stood out to him? And did it inspire him for further albums?
I don't know if it inspired him. I know that Rhythm Nation was particularly, you know, special to him. I remember the first time, I think, Dangerous Tour, when we were first starting working on the Dangerous Tour, he wanted to add the military section to jam. And so he told me, you know, like you guys did in Rhythm Nation, something like that. And that was my inspiration. But, of course, I did something totally different. But, yeah, so it was something that he really loved, that military, that strong, powerful movement, plus that strong message is something that he was always about.
Joining us on the show is legendary dancer and choreographer Lavelle Smith Jr. talking about his career and celebrating the 25th anniversary of Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation. Make sure to learn more about him on his website, lavellesmithjr.com. You've worked with so many artists, Lavelle, ranging from En Vogue to Brandy, Chris Brown, TLC, Diana Ross, as you mentioned, Beyonce, and of course, Michael and Janet. If you look back on Janet during her Rhythm Nation era, does it stand out to you that someone who was in their early 20s at the time had so many important social issues she wanted to get across to the world? Because nowadays, like, it seems to me, at least, and I actually work in top 40 radio, that a lot of the younger artists in pop music, it just seems, whether they want to or not, you know, whether they're being instructed to or not, that it's all about the party and not really having anything sort of socially conscious to say.
You know, I think it always is a choice. You know, we're all in control of our everything, so it's a choice. But I think it's amazing that she chose to use her voice to do that so long ago and at so young of age. It was something that has to be said. I mean, it's okay to talk about partying, too, but I think when people who are just doing that, one day they'll have a moment in their life where they realize, well, maybe I should say something, maybe I should use my voice. But she got it right away. I mean, Jenna was the original, you know, amazing pop dance singer, and this time, and she came with a message. So, yeah, you can't beat that. She was the beginning of that.
What is your favorite song on Rhythm Nation, and how do you think the album as a whole, you know, holds up today, 25 years later?
Oh, gosh,
I'm making you work, Lavelle.
I mean, it's still an amazing. Are you kidding? It's still an amazing, amazing album. I like all the songs on the album. One song that wasn't on the album that was on the B side, I think, of Miss You Much, called Skin Game. I was in love with that song. I love that whole album, of course, and Skin Game.
You know, Janet has been taking a break from the music scene for a couple of years now, and I'm sure you know that her fans are, you know, clamoring for her to make her return. Do you think she will come back? And if so, what do you expect from her? Because, you know, you've worked with her before. You kind of know how she thinks.
I just think you don't know. You don't know. I mean, artists are artists. But until they share it with you, you have no idea what's in their head. You just don't know. But I do know that whatever it is, it will be amazing. You know that. She puts in the work. It's going to be amazing.
You know, both Janet and Michael fans will kill me if I don't ask you about Scream for a second. I wanted to ask you what it was like being on the set with these, you know, two monster superstars who just happened to be brother and sister.
Yeah, I found Scream exciting but difficult. You know, like you said, there's two major stars. It's a big, big, massive set. It was a lot of stuff. But ultimately, I mean, what came out of it was just phenomenal. But how could it not be? I mean, look at the two people. But yeah, it was amazing and hard.
And with
but
regards,
it's worth it. Look what happened.
With regards to it being, you know, how hard and challenging, I wanted to ask you that because from the sense that we got, you know, again, people sort of from the outside looking in, we understood that it was you and Travis that worked a lot with Michael. And then, you know, Tina and Sean Cheeseman had been working with Janet quite a bit. Was it difficult for you guys, like all four of you, to come together?
I don't think that was a problem for us at all. Everybody did what they needed to do for their artists. And then with the time to come together, you do that. But I don't think that was hard. That wasn't the hard part. It was long hours. There was another hard thing. But that wasn't hard at all. We just did what we do.
And what did it feel like walking away with that MTV Video Music Award, you know, that year for Scream?
I was shocked. I remember, I think that was the same year Madonna Expressed Yourself, I think. I was shocked, but very, very happy.
I wanted to ask you as well, you know, there's going to be a ton of both Janet fans and Michael fans that are going to listen to this interview. What do you want them to really know about Janet and Michael as people? Because we all know them as artists, but, you know, I think they hold a special place, obviously, for people who've worked with them as people.
Yeah, you know, I've been around the Jackson family since I started in Hollywood, and they've never changed. They've always been kind, funny. I just enjoy being around them because they work hard. They're from that era of old Hollywood where hard work, dedication, those are things that, you know, that you realize you have to have to make good work. And they get that. And so you see that in the rehearsal process. You see that in the casting. You see that in every way when you work with them. And I love that.
Lavelle,
we need more of that.
Yeah, I think so, because I think a lot of I wanted your take on that, Lavelle. You know, as someone who's been in the trenches and really, you know, done the work, and I know Tina mentioned this as well, that she finds a lot of up and coming dancers right now expect sort of immediate gratification because of some of these, I guess, dance shows, almost like the reality, you know, singing shows. What's your take on the dance community now? Do you think a lot of people still need to put the work in for technique, and is the dance community healthy moving forward?
Well, I think always technique. I mean, people, I think, are a little bit afraid of technique because they think it's going to change the way they freestyle or change this or that. And I can understand that, but it doesn't. It doesn't at all. It just makes you stronger and gives you more opportunity when you freestyle. It gives you more to pull from. It gives you more information. Your library grows. So I don't think, you know, that missing technique is a good thing. But technique is important. It's all important. Know as much as you can, and you work as much as you want.
Have you noticed, too, Lavelle, again, you know, as the generations progress, you know, sadly, Michael's been gone now for 5 years. And again, we've sort of mentioned that Janet's been off the scene just for a little while. How much of an influence do they still have, though, on kids that are up and coming that are, you know, are young and maybe weren't even born when Rhythm Nation came out, or, you know, even let alone the Velvet Rope album, for example?
Well, I think it's like when you see it, you know it. You know, I don't think people really care how long somebody's been away. When someone amazing comes back and reemerges, and it's awesome, you got to give it up. You love it. You love it.
Lavelle, I want to thank you so much for your time today. And I think if I can speak on behalf of Janet and Michael fans for just a second, you know, thank you so much for all of your hard work and commitment to these two amazing artists, because we've definitely, you know, benefited from your talent and creativity. So thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
That's legendary dancer and choreographer Lavelle Smith Jr. again talking about his career and celebrating the 25th anniversary of Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation. Make sure to check him out on his website, lavellesmithjr.com.
Change the way the world is running.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, it's Kelly Alexander hanging out on the Kelly Alexander Show. We're very excited to be joined by Mike from Royal Blood. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to ask you, I was actually talking to one of your label people a while ago, and they said to me, and I wanted to get your opinion, they said, Royal Blood are like the new Black Keys. Is that a lot to take in for you, or and flattering?
I mean, I think to try and be the new anything is always a fight for second place, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I like to think we're the new Royal Blood.
That's a good answer. And I wanted to ask you, where did you guys come up with the name? For people, because I have people listening right now to the show that are from Australia and Japan, as well as Canada. So, can you explain where you guys picked the name from?
Well, I mean, naming a band is like one of the hardest things.
That's what I've heard. That is really difficult.
It's very difficult. And a lot of names kicked around, but that one, that name was something I thought of, and it really just stuck. And it was apparent that that was what our band was going to be called, you know? There's no real genuine or sincere meaning behind the name. It's just something that we felt was a good title for the music we were making. As simple as that, really. We always knew that the record was going to be called Royal Blood.
Okay.
And it made sense to call the band that as well. We wanted to give off a clear message about, you know, that we're from England as well.
That's that, amazing.
In a subtle way. So, Royal Blood is what stuck.
And speaking of the album, is it a collection of songs or is there like a theme to it in your mind?
In my head, there is a theme, but the theme is really the collection of songs, you know. It's our first record, and, you know, I didn't want it to be contrived or have an agenda other than to just capture our sound.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what a first record should do. It should put your flag in the ground and it should establish your sound and your band. So, I mean, there's songs on the record that were written in the first week of the band's conception.
Wow.
And there's songs on the record that were literally finished like three to four weeks ago. You know, so it's we made sure that we looked at the whole spread of songs over that time and that the best ideas went on the record. Just for personal reasons as well, I wanted it to be a time capsule for me so that when I'm older, I look back and from those songs, I would be able to remember and fill in the gaps of what was going on at that time and the space that the band was in. So, there's no particular theme other than it being a time capsule, a true representation of who we are.
Is it hard for you to have a favorite song on the album? Because I know, like, when I speak to artists, they always say like the same general idea, like, those are my babies, I love all of them. But does one sort of really click with you internally, or a few of them maybe?
I guess it's always going to be the last one I wrote, because it's probably come from the freshest place in my being, you know, in my head. Particularly what I'm singing about, but there's a track on the last track on the record, Better Strangers. Yeah, it was a really powerful experience having that in the studio. Sort of the lyrically and musically, it felt like the last move. It felt like the sort of closing, the closing scene of the film, you know.
Okay, that's
and it,
amazing.
It had this real, like, it's very reflective, I think, of the whole sort of content lyrically, and felt like it summed it up. So,
and where do you get your inspiration from, Mike? Like when you're writing, like, is it everything? Like everything's up for grabs when you're writing. And
yeah.
Do you guys write together?
We always write together. Okay. Yeah, I think, you know, particularly being just two of us, it's you got to play to your strengths, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of your biggest strength we have is the chemistry, and that's always going to be better when it's together.
Mm-hmm.
It's like planning a holiday, you know.
If
one of you plans the whole trip and then go, "Here's what we're doing," it's like. Whereas if you sit down together and you go, "What are we going to do?" You know, it's you're on the same page at
you're
all times.
You're a smart guy, Mike.
You know?
I like that.
I'm an idiot. I didn't go to university. But, thank you. You're the first
smart
person that's ever said that.
Well, I'm here all week. how do you categorize your sound? Because I always find it interesting when, you know, music writers or, you know, DJs or whatever, they want to tell you how you sound or what you sound like. But what do you guys feel like? Because I don't like telling people, oh, you're pop folk or you're rock or you're, you know, electronic. Like, what are you?
Well, one of my favorite quotes of all time is Jeff Buckley, and he was referring to what someone had asked him, and he said, you know, what do you want people? Someone said to him, what do you want people to get out of your music? And he said, whatever you want. And that always resonated with me, and I kind of feel the same about how people perceive us, how people compare us, and what they compare us to, or how they feel where we pulled from, or what influenced us. And it's like, everyone says something so different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm kind of easy. It's like, I would never want to tell someone they're wrong.
Okay, you know? I like that. That's amazing.
I guess we kind of know where that came from, but
okay,
maybe there's things that are subconsciously in there as well, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now you're from England. Do you guys plan to stay there, or do you think, like, you know, you might want to move to the States at some point, or do you feel like who you are, what you do, it has to be from where you guys are in England?
I mean, this is the first time I've been around the world like this, you know? So home is somewhere, home is the road.
Okay. Yep.
You know? And it's like, yeah, it's weird. It's like, yeah, even though I miss home and that will always be your home, I kind of, the concept of being somewhere else is a lot more feasible.
Okay.
And a lot more understandable. Particularly being that, you know, given the lifestyle that we do at the moment, mm-hmm. time off is a matter of days,
mm-hmm.
Weeks if you're lucky. So I like the idea of keep moving around, really. I'd love to come to the States, and like particularly Chicago, I'm a big fan of, which we just came from.
Okay.
That was like the first holiday I went to growing up.
Okay.
And my cousins live out there, so it's got that weird, like, you get feeling when you get there, and I don't know, I've had some good times there.
That's awesome.
I like it.
And I wanted to ask you mentioned touring all the time. What do you need to have with you on the road?
My luggage, which I don't have. It got lost.
Oh no, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's on its way today, I think.
Oh my god, that's terrible.
Yeah, luggage is very important.
That is very important. Do you have something, like, do you always need your iPhone, or do you always need, like, you know, whatever? Is there something that you really sticks out to you, though?
I need my phone, yeah, because I get lost a lot.
Okay.
And my tour manager is always, like, trying to get hold of me. So, just for practical reasons.
Gotcha.
That's a very handy tool.
Last question before I let you go. Actually, two quick ones. If you could go out to dinner with anyone, musically-wise, musician, band, artist, whatever, who would that be? Like, whose brain would you like to pick?
I would like to hang out with Jimi Hendrix.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would be a good guess. Yeah.
I don't even necessarily would want... I kind of wouldn't want to pick his brain either.
Just to hang out.
I just want to hang out. I think... I don't know. I think it would ruin it. I don't want to know. You know?
I get that.
I'd want to talk about really mundane things and just see what he is like, you know?
Awesome. And last thing for my listeners, what can we expect from you guys in the next, like, 6 months? Like, I know the album's coming out soon. So lots of touring, I guess, and all that kind of good stuff.
We're going to be in a town near you.
Okay. That's perfect. Awesome. Mike, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
That's Mike from Royal Blood on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, this is Mike from Royal Blood, and I'm hanging out on The Kelly Alexander Show.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
We are very excited to welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show a Canadian recording artist who's doing amazingly well. She's just released her latest album, Little Machines, and she is here to hang out with us. Lights, hello, my sweet.
Hello, how are you doing again?
I'm good. It's
been a while.
I know. I'm so happy to have you back here. Since we spoke the last time, you have had a child.
A lot
you
has happened.
You've gotten married. It's like I don't even know what's going on.
I know.
So
me too.
My first question, I think, would be did marriage change things, like with you just even as a recording artist? Like, were you expecting to be married before 30? Like,
I feel like it comes when you're not expecting it, because at the time that I met him, I was just not wanting a relationship at all. And then it comes and you're like, all right, I don't even care. I'll get married. Who cares? And I think the one thing that probably changed the most for me was you fall in love for the first time. I mean, for me, that was the first time. And Siberia is kind of all about that, the last record, all about falling in love. But now that I'm married, you can't really write about falling in love for the first time or like someone breaking your heart or something like that, you know? So that would be the main point of change. Like, what do I write about now? My heart isn't getting broken. I'm not, you know, out searching for love. I'm not lonely. I'm not this or that. So it's like, you find new content. And with this record, it was all about kind of going back to nostalgia and feeling young again and rediscovering your passion for life and music and that kind of thing.
That's actually amazing that you would speak about that. Getting married, you can't really write about the lonely times
anymore,
unless you really want to bring it back to back
in the day. It's just kind of dishonest, because I never like to write something that feels like not me. You know, you just, that would be for someone else. If you're writing from your heart, you're going to write about things you're experiencing.
Now, I know that when you write, like, I feel like you're a very self-aware person and self-aware of the world around you. Do you find that your lyrics are really, like, quote-unquote, deep? Or do you try to sort of be easy for your fans to pick up on your message, if I can say it like that?
You got to try to do a bit of both. I think it's important to dig a little and sort of exercise your emotional attention, because that's what music and art is all about. I think it's very cathartic, and it's healthy, and it's important to speak on issues that you're dealing with, because I think a lot of people are going through the same things. But at the same time, you can't write so it goes over people's heads, or you can't write about a specific thing, because then it's only applicable to you and no one else. Like, don't give dates, you know, and like numbers. But yeah, there's sort of this art, this poetic quality to trying to make something deep but still accessible. And I think it's fun and challenging.
Now, having Baby Rocket, which I just think is the coolest name ever. Her and Pharrell, they've got the amazing children
named Rocket. I know, it's so great. I didn't know that before I named Rocket. Sorry, Pharrell.
has motherhood changed you, like, with regards to writing and even how you prioritize your career now, because you do have this little munchkin that needs mommy?
Yeah, for sure. I think I cut the fat a little bit with the things that I stress out over. Mm-hmm. I'm more chilled out than I ever was, I think, which is kind of ironic, because you think that going to motherhood, everything gets crazy. But it forces me to level every few hours. You know, you have to sit down, even if it's a crazy day, you have to sit down and feed her. Mm-hmm. And you breathe. And before a stage, you sit down and you just look at her, and it just reminds you that, why are you, what was all the things you worried about before? They don't matter, you know, nothing matters.
I wanted to ask you this, because my parents have told me this before, that when you become a parent, because I'm not a parent yet, that you sort of envision what your kid's life is going to be. And I think you're a very free person. Have you already started to do that with Rocket? Like, maybe this is what she's going to do. Maybe she'll be an artist like mommy and daddy. Like, has that started to cross your mind at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think about it sometimes, but I remind myself that I'm open to her being anything she wants. She's being raised as a tour baby, right? She's being raised around music. Literally part of her makeup is Little Machines, the new album. Like, she was raised on it. But I think part of me is kind of like, you never want to do what your parents do. You're like, will she want tattoos? Probably not. Her parents have it. It's uncool. You know, so if she doesn't go into music, it's like, do whatever you want. She'll probably be the opposite of me. Maybe want to be an accountant or something.
Which is very good, because they pay the rent.
Everyone needs accountants.
Talk to us about Little Machines. Was it a long process in coming to it? Because I'd read that you had a bit of a, I don't even like to say this, but writer's block.
Yeah, no, I did. Okay. A part of it was that sort of rediscovery about content. Like, what do you want to write about? I'm not lonely anymore. I'm pretty happy in life. That's kind of artistic bane, isn't it? Just being pretty happy where you are. That probably kind of started it, you know, trying to think about something cool to write about. And then as time went on, I'd been touring for a long time and hadn't exercised the muscle, so I was out of practice, which was I've learned from my mistakes, and now I'll always keep writing. And I felt time as sort of pressure, and some of the songs are written about that. It was 3 years between albums. Mm-hmm. So now that Little Machine's out, and that's a long time business-wise. but you can't let those things affect you. And they do, though. And you feel the sort of time pressure, and you feel the pressure you apply on yourself in terms of expectations from whether it's your label or your fans or yourself. And it was all probably self-applied pressures, but that really bogged me down. And it really forced me to rediscover what I liked about music and what my purpose is in music. Because I can't write something with conviction if I don't think there's a purpose behind it. Mm-hmm. So it was good. It ended up being amazing because I had to rediscover my creativity and rediscover my path. And in that time, I found out I was pregnant, and that helped rediscover an entire new level of priorities. And I was faced with sort of a crossroads, and I thought, you know, do I keep doing music, or do I stop and focus on being a parent? And in those moments, realized how much I love making music and how lucky I am to do it, mm-hmm. and how much I love the fans and the touring and just everything, you know, creating something out of nothing and putting it out there, and it affects people's lives. I think it's just so amazing. So I think in that, I feel like a new artist all over again. And I'm very, very much proud to be here.
Up We Go is amazing.
Thank
and,
you.
You know, it's so fun and up, and it just makes you want to like rock out.
Good.
Which is
what it's all about.
So when you were writing the song, did you feel like you were gonna have something special with that? Because certain songs, it takes over you. And I feel like that's one of those songs.
Really?
And the video too, you know what
that's
I mean?
That's awesome. It was funny. That song came kind of funny. I wrote it with Togs, who I've been co-writing with for like 10 years. And we kind of came up with the chorus, and it was written in a time that I was telling myself that it's only up we go from here, right? You know, like I've been in this dry spell for so long. All that can happen is it goes up, right? And I wasn't convinced of it, but I wrote it in the song because I wanted it to be true. And sat on the song for a while, for like a month, trying to slave through the lyrics. It wasn't really flowing as easily as a lot of songs because I was in that place. Mm-hmm. Went back in the studio with him about a month later and just kind of slammed it together and was like, all right, well, yeah, that's done, you know, I guess. Went back to my hotel that night and started to work on the next song, and I couldn't get this other idea I had for Up We Go out of my head. And I was sitting in the tub, and I remember standing up in the tub and just belting out the verses you hear now, you know? And that's, suddenly it was this captivating inspiration moment. And I went in the studio the next day, and I said, this is how the song's going to be. And everyone heard it, and everyone flipped out, and it was like, this is going to be the single. You know, it did what it was supposed to do, and did what the song is about, you know?
Now, I would say that you are definitely one of Canada's elite female artists.
Oh, my goodness. That's huge, because, I mean, there's a lot of great
Well, there are a lot, but I feel like, you know, you've been around for a while, and, you know, I wonder, do you find that the scene is supportive of each other, especially, like, on the female side? And do you have up-and-comers now going, hey, Lights, like, what do I do? How does this roll?
Yeah, I think the Canadian music scene's pretty small, all things considered. I mean, I've even had the opportunity to shake hands with Joni Mitchell, who is, I think, my biggest Canadian musical female hero. But it is a very supportive community. I don't know if it's, you know, coming down to giving people advice and that kind of thing. I wouldn't put myself in that position yet. But, I mean, just the other day we played We Day. And my husband and I were standing side stage before we went on in front of, like, this really cool crowd of kids that are trying to make a change. You know, 20,000 kids. And my baby's right there. You know, we have her in my hands about to go up. And Nelly Furtado came off stage and came up. And she's like, parenting on the road, I know how it is. You know, just having a chat. And I think it's those kind of things that make it the Canadian music world. And you know,
that's awesome.
Now gelling.
You are traveling all over the world. You're traveling across Canada, then you're going to the States as well in between there, and then you're heading overseas. Do you notice a difference between your fans over in Canada? Like, is it more important for you because you're here to tour here, or is it important too to just do it up?
I think it's important to take it everywhere. Take it as far as you can. I think that was the goal I set for myself when I first started. Let's reach as many people as possible with music that makes you happy. You know, music that takes you out of it for a few minutes. That's the point of music. And the fan bases in the States aren't that different. I mean, okay, Here they might be a little bit more broad because there is support on radio, mm-hmm. which is so rad. And I think it exposes you to people that wouldn't normally, you know, search the internet for you. Whereas in the States, it doesn't get as much radio support. So it's all people that have discovered you through word of mouth or through internet or, you know, whatever, wherever they may have seen it. And so that's sort of maybe more of a college age demographic, and here it's very broad, and I think it's just cool. It's just different, a little bit, slightly different vibes, but ultimately it's cool.
The last time you and I spoke, social media really hadn't hit yet, so that's going back a few years.
Yeah.
So you were obviously out doing your thing.
I don't think I had Instagram then.
Probably not. How important is social media, you hearing from your fans? Does it make your day, you know, to say like someone's like, your song, it moves me, like whatever.
Totally.
It is
absolutely. Kay. It's so important, I think, on that level, you know, hearing how it's moved people and how it resonates with people and people that have resisted suicide because of it. I think that's insane. It just makes me feel like it's so worth it, you know, at the end of the day. But one of the cool things about it is you get a sense of what songs people like live, for example, which ones they want to hear, and that affects your set, your tour set, what you're going to play at the shows. That affects if I'm going to do an acoustic version of something or what people are going to hear. It's just cool. You get like direct feedback from the people that are buying the record. So I think it's just an amazing tool.
Before I let you go, I have to ask you about this.
Yeah.
Because I love cymbals. I'm a Rhythm Nation Janet Jackson girl.
You got to represent.
And so, but you told me this is like from a passion of yours. So explain this and what it means for your fans.
Well, I'm a fan of anime and like a lot of nerdisms. And I think one of the cool things about the sort of, I guess, quote unquote nerdy community is that you're able to represent what you're into subtly so that the other people that are into that thing recognize it, but no one else does because it doesn't have the name on it. Mm-hmm. You know, so one example is I'm into an anime called Bleach.
Okay.
Or a manga called Bleach, and I'll wear a Bleach patch, you know, with Ichigo Kurosaki on it or something, and the innocent bystander won't know what it is, but a Bleach fan will, and so it connects you. And I wanted something that represented all things lights so that other people that recognize it will be able to bro down when they see it. And it's something I can wear too because it doesn't say my name on it. I feel lame wearing my own merch, but this is like, this is not the same. This is like Lights Army right here.
Lights Army, that is so cool. Thank you so much for hanging out with us
on the show.
Of course,
thank you.
This is my girl, Lights.
Yeah. It's always so nice to see you, man.
Hanging out on the Kelly Alexander Show. And again, check her out on her website, music.imlights.com.
Hey, this is Lights, and you're listening to the Kelly Alexander Show.
For you on the Kelly Alexander Show. First of all, pop queen Kesha has surfaced weeks after launching a lawsuit against her former producer, Dr. Luke, who she has alleged subjected her to years of sexual, physical, verbal, and emotional abuse. Kesha jumped back onto her Twitter account and wished her fans a happy Halloween and thanked them as well for all their support over the last few weeks. There seems like there's going to be quite the battle going on between Kesha and Dr. Luke because he has filed a countersuit claiming her allegations are completely false and that she is trying to extort him to get out of her recording contract. As Taylor Swift continues to promote her new album, 1989,
She's gracing the cover of Cosmo UK's December edition. And here are three points of interest in the article. First of all, Taylor says that she loves living in New York City and that moving there was the best thing she's ever done. She says it was a challenge uprooting her life, but she couldn't be happier in her new surroundings. Taylor also loves actress Lena Dunham, saying that Lena has changed her outlook on life and that Lena is like a hug in the form of a person. And finally, Taylor says she is very happy being single and has no immediate plans whatsoever to get back into the dating game. She's not lonely and she's not looking. And with regards to her new album, 1989, it's doing very well. It's forecast to sell more than 1.3 million copies during its first week of sales. That would actually break the one-week sales record for an album by a female artist, which was set by the debut of Britney Spears' Oops, I Did It Again album back in 2000, and the weekly sales record for any album since 2002, when Eminem's The Eminem Show sold over 1.3 million during its first full week. On top of that, Taylor has announced her world tour to support 1989. The first date kicks off in Louisiana on May 20th. Simply Red have announced a string of shows to celebrate the band's 30th anniversary. The shows come 5 years after their last performance. In a handwritten note on the band's website, lead singer Mick Hucknall said, "Hello everyone, I'm happy to celebrate with you our 30 years in music. We hope you're going to enjoy the shows as much as we will. See you there." The band, who formed in Manchester in 1985, have sold over 50 million albums worldwide. Hucknall, now 54, went solo after Split and most recently released a collection of American soul covers back in 2012. And finally, here's a song that's been making some noise around the world, specifically in the club scene since its release earlier this year. It's called Faded, from an EDM musician called Zhu, who so far is trying to remain anonymous because he wants his tracks to be judged off the music alone. This is Faded on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Time.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We really appreciate you spending time with us on the show. And as always, a big thank you going out to my guests this week, Lavelle Smith Jr., Royal Blood, and Lights. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Walt Disney. All the adversity I've had in my life, all my troubles and obstacles have strengthened me. You may not realize it when it happens, but a kick in the teeth may be the best thing in the world for you. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media, on Twitter, at K Alexander Show, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, and of course, on our YouTube channel, Kelly Alexander Show, where we feature all of our interviews. If you've got any comments or questions, drop me a line, Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have an amazing week. You and I will chat soon.